Audio hosting for comics are great is provided by Kablam, KABLAM.com, the one-stop printing solution for independent comics publishers. This time on the show, ask your librarian.
Verisimilitude versus accuracy.
And storytellers are lint brushes. All this and more on Comics Are Great. It's time once again for Comics Are Great, the visual storytelling show recorded live every Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time at the Ann Arbor District Library in lovely downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan. As I said, this is the visual storytelling show, so we talk about telling stories with pictures, telling stories with images, writing with images, comics, after all, because they are pretty great. So, speaking of great, we got Tony Cliff on the show. I looked Paul Story in the eye as I said, speaking of great, moment of anticipation.
You know the worst part, though? I was like, oh, so he's going to segue over to Tony right away. I know you're wild.
I don't think it's that. I think it's your sense of self-loathing.
I hate that you said that. I hate me that you said that.
Oh, man. I got to stop laughing. So we've got Tony Cliff on the show. Tony Cliff of DelilahDirk.com.
Can I just say, as somebody who listens to a lot of podcasts during their workday, it's nice to hear a little laughter.
Is it okay? Oh, well, that's good. Okay, good. Well, I'm glad it doesn't annoy you at least.
So at least lean back, though.
Yeah, observe my mic technique.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do now. Is like when I laugh.
Whoa! Yeah.
So it's not like wow.
So. Tony of DelilahDirk.com, let's introduce you to the audience. We don't need to introduce Paul because Paul's been on, what is this, your fourth or fifth time?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I like the fact that in your email prep you said, you've been on like three times.
It's been like, I couldn't remember. I just figured like it was more than two. I'll just do three. The watership down and I just put Hryer, you know, yeah. Meaning many.
Weren't we talking about Tony?
Yes, we were talking about Tony. Yeah, thank you for that. So, Tony.
Guys, what have I gotten myself into? Oh my God.
Actually, you've gotten yourself into a live cast fan club is what you've gotten yourself into.
Yeah. So I was introduced to your comic by Dave Roman of yaytime.com. He mentioned Delilah Dirk months ago on the show, as a matter of fact. Let's see. Okay, I'm going to do my best to describe it, then I'll let you do your pitch for it. Man, as I was reading this book, or comic, online comic, I got a sense of this is Indiana Jones meets Lupin the Third. Does that sound fair?
You forgot you need to throw it back a little bit, though. A little further. Historical bat element.
Well, yeah, but I just meant like in terms of like the high adventure, explosions, crazy fighting, and a hero who is just this unflappable, capable person who could do anything. And often does. And often does. Yeah. The Indiana Jones aspect in terms of there's a lot of killing in it, but it's how do you describe that kind of like violence?
Is there a lot of killing in Indiana Jones?
Yeah.
I was thinking about that the other night. Yeah, a little bit, but it's not like, if you compared it to, say, a video game. I can agree with you maybe a little bit. I haven't, internet, don't get mad at me. I haven't seen Lupin the Third.
No. Oh, it's, well.
I'm familiar with it a little bit, but not extensively.
Well, Lupin the Third is, it's a group of thieves, international thieves, and they wind up, and this is where, like, there's a departure, because, I mean, we're not that far into Delilah Dirk yet, so I don't know if you're headed in this direction, but it always starts out with Lupin wanting to steal something from somebody. He gets entrenched in an even darker, more evil kind of conspiracy or plot, and then he has to fix the situation, meanwhile, while trying to escape Inspector Zenigata, who's always chasing him. But it's a lot of, like, madcap running on rooftops, really, really great character dynamics, like Lupin, Jigen, and Goemon. You've seen or read some of these books, right? Yes, no?
I will say yes, because my friend Sonny Strait does the voice of Lupin the Third now.
Oh, really?
So I will say yes. I love it with the looping and the.
Wait, is this a continuing? What is it? It's a, I thought it was a movie from the 80s.
Oh no, no, it was a series of manga put out in the 60s by an artist known as Monkey Punch, and his early stuff, that's the name he goes by, and his early stuff looked very Kurtzman-esque when you look at that. Like, I think Tokyo Pop years ago put out a big collection of all the old stuff. These days it looks a lot different, but it has like that kind of like really ecstatic energy to it that Delilah Dirk has.
You know what Delilah Dirk for geeky types. It is like if you took River Song from Doctor Who and popped her back into the mid to late 1800s, right?
Yeah, late
1800s. And she just she's got that just kind of raw madcap energy, and I particularly like, you know, her current sidekick. I don't know if you're gonna, you know, keep the lieutenant there, you know.
Well, the title of the book is called Delilah Dirk and the Turkish Lieutenant.
Well, so. Yes, but there might be then a new companion, if you will, for the next story arc. But I just love the energy and the inventiveness and the lush colors.
Let's introduce people to the plot real quick too. So, okay. What's the general plot of this thing? The premise.
The Turkish Lieutenant is I'm bad at summarizing these things. The Turkish Lieutenant is basically a story of a lieutenant in the Janissary army, sort of reluctant lieutenant. He just wants to lead a quiet life. He sort of enjoys his tea. He's very good at making his tea. And then during the course of his duties, this like brash adventuress swings into his life. First she inadvertently but effectively causes his execution, or calls for his execution, but it's his fault that he's to be executed. And then she saves his life, and so now he is stuck with the dilemma of how do I repay this person, and having to adopt to a much more adventurous lifestyle than he was previously used to.
Yes.
And that is Delilah Dirk in a nutshell so far.
And I was going to segue into talking about building premises, because I think there's a dynamite premise. But
We don't need to talk about anything I've ever done.
That's I was going to say. I'm going to hold back on that so that we can go to Mr. Guilt Trip here. Almost like a brother to me. He guilt trips me so much. Mr. Paul Story.
Do you have a brother?
There's seven kids in my family.
Are there some of them also boys?
Yes, I have three.
Notice, by the way, I was generous and said also boys.
Thank you. Four brothers. Brothers, two sisters. Huge brood. Huge brood. Yeah. We're like the Borg. So yes, Paul's story of Storyville,
and I've been assimilated now. So
yes, because you try to make me feel bad, so you must be a member of my family.
Your family and my family should get together and go bowling.
Hey, let's do it. Are you going to roll that ball or what? You know. So Paul's story of Storyville.com, fifth time on the show, sixth time on the show. Who knows anymore? It doesn't matter. We lost count. You know.
We're artistic types. We don't do well with numbers.
You know, last week's show went really fast. It just like felt like it blasted by, and yeah. I thought, you know, I need to really feel like I'm enjoying and drinking in and experiencing the show slowly. And I thought of the book Catch-22, where there was that character who just laid in bed all the time because the more boring his life was, the slower life would seem to go by. And I thought, Paul, I got to get him on the show. So okay, Paul's story. You brought the Green Hornet case files here.
I did bring the Green Hornet case files again because I know I talked it up a little bit. It's actually not comics, though.
This is prose. Comics.
It is a prose
words
collection.
Geez, I don't know about that.
But you know, featuring a character who has been repeatedly brought back to the comics world.
I don't want to go down too big of a tributary sidewinding trail. But what did you think of that Green Hornet movie?
I just saw it for the first time.
Is it okay?
I'm really disappointed because there was actually a movie underneath what they released. It was like, wow, that could have been good. It was like that close, really that close to being, but then they just had to ham it up too much and just, you know.
Did anybody pass gas in the movie?
Well, He's got a gas gun. I think he actually.
Oh, you know what I mean.
No. I think he actually referred to it as a fart gun at one point.
See, there you go. That's when you know you've crossed that line when somebody makes that joke. You know,
it's just it was. I was watching it, going, "Oh, it's so close. It's like so close to being okay."
So it gets 3 out of 5 from the Paul story.
Yeah. Okay.
Rating. Okay.
Yeah.
So then you got the Muse here.
The Muse, which is due out actually in December, so should be in the next few weeks.
So it's too late to pre-order it from Diamond.
No, you can get your retailer can do an advance reorder.
Oh, so go to your retailer.
And yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So anything else that you wanted to promote? You write a lot of stuff. You also wrote Gotham Girls.
I did write Gotham Girls.
So and hello.
All I can see that you, you have these both on your website. Is there any way anybody can take a look at a preview?
Of the Muse?
Of either. I'm looking at both of them right
now.
Okay.
Well, I don't have a preview of Green Hornet, but I should actually get a preview of the Muse up on my website. I know that they did... I don't have all the pages. That's one of the problems with when you work with a publisher. I'm not saying it's a problem of the publisher, but I'm just saying you don't always, you know, end up with enough stuff to put up previews. But that's a good idea. I should do that. Thank you, Tony.
Well, try before you buy. Yeah, it's always a good idea. Yeah. And that's what Tony does with DelilahDirk.com. It's all there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be pretty cool.
I could do like a five-page preview. I think that's
you can do an all-page preview and just trust your readers to actually purchase the book.
I am not the publisher on that, so I really have to go by the publisher's
desire. Well, why don't you exercise a little bit of that Paul story strength? Some of that star power that you got to leverage it. He's also Storyville on the Twitters.
I didn't mention Tony.
And you could follow him on Twitter to find out that you've been doing a little bit of the power walking. Life begins at 60.
Oh, good. I've got a few years before my life begins. Thank you.
How's that go? I mean, because, you know, exercise, this is a sedentary lifestyle,
man. It really is. And you know what? I've been feeling better and... you know, I'm also incredibly lazy, so I popped the treadmill down in front of the television.
Oh, I thought you were, because I was going to ask, where do you go in downtown Detroit with all the, you know, the monsters and fire pits?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't live in downtown Detroit, Jersey.
Oh, that's the way you always make it sound.
No, that's the way you always make it sound. I got a little bit of inspiration because artist Colleen Duran was talking about how she set up a treadmill right next to her drawing board so she could hop up and put in a few minutes, you know, from time to time. Because, yeah, it is good to get up and move around a little bit, get the blood flowing.
Have you guys talked at all about like standing desks or tried standing?
That's like
desks
a hot topic now, isn't it? Everybody's talking about standing desks.
Can
all
you
of
use
a sudden
the words "hot topic"? Do you have to?
They don't exist anymore. Now they're Spencer's gift. So yeah, it's a topic that is being widely discussed amongst our ilk.
Yeah,
is a standing desk thing. Have you ever tried it, Tony?
I have not, but I've heard the buzz over the last few months or so.
But you're like an obscenely good looking guy, so I don't think you need to worry about all that health stuff just yet.
Thank you. You will get me started. This is funny because this is a conversation I had with Dave Roman and Raina Telgemeier, and anybody else who will listen, is about yoga.
Ooh.
Yoga. You seek
wait,
yoga.
Don't put the defenses up yet. Okay.
I was just going for the easy joke. That's all.
you mean you don't try hard at your jokes? Who knew? Go ahead, Tony. I'm sorry.
I will suggest to anybody who's in this line of work or animation or anything else where you're sitting in front of the desk all the time, if you're having trouble with your back, you have got to look into yoga.
Yeah. So you do yoga then. You do the hot yoga?
Well, I will give you this anecdotal evidence.
Okay.
I would say that I had recurring back problems for a while, working in animation and working on the comics, especially with the Cintiq. A Cintiq puts you in some weird desk positions with your shoulder, one shoulder up, one shoulder down, blah, blah, blah. I started doing yoga, and I'm not going to say that my problems never came back or anything, but... it really helped, and if anything did show up, it went away pretty quickly. I stopped doing it about 2 months ago, just because my schedule shifted and my workplace shifted and that sort of thing. The other week I had some crippling back pain.
At least for me,
it seems to have been working. So.
Well, I think
yoga to anybody.
Don't you think a part of that is because we tend to be in a single position, and then the yoga also, in addition to all like the strength benefits or the endurance benefits, there's a lot of stretching and stretching in directions that we don't normally, you know, because mm-hmm. we usually get the hunch.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. You know, what Tony was describing with the shoulder thing is something that I struggle with a lot. I mean, when I don't have a Cintiq, but I've got a tablet, and so this hand is hunched over. My keyboard doing my key commands, and this hand is up here like this, and so this shoulder gets torn up really bad right underneath the shoulder blade, and so
I used to run into that with my mouse sometimes. If I was using the mouse a lot, I would get that how did it get to be under the shoulder blade? There's like this knot of muscle.
And it feels like it's burning. Yeah, that's brutal. So yeah, no, I like how you had to say like, don't put up your defenses yet. But actually, I'm in full agreement with you on that. Whether it's Pilates or yoga, something that involves stretching of some kind. I used to do yoga, lightning posture, and all that stuff. But anyway,
I did a little bit of yoga associated with an exercise program on DVD. I don't know if I should mention Power 90 because, you know, they don't advertise on
Power 90?
Yeah.
What's that?
Is that the same as P90X that I keep hearing about?
P90X is like the more intense version that they came up with to get more money out of people.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Jersey, is this the direction you wanted?
No, it's not. Thank you. So, but we were talking about how good looking you are. And that's another thing that just ticks me off. Is that, okay, great art, great comic, really nice guy, and he's good looking too. That's always brutal to run up against
But he is indulging in the Canadian stereotype by wearing plaid.
Oh, is that a stereotype?
Well.
And
we're all lumberjacks.
It's okay.
Maybe that's the source of my back problems. Damn trees.
But
back.
You know what? You were talking about standing desks and my walking regimen.
Yeah.
I saw John Layman, who writes the awesome Chew comic, talking about he put like a desk across his treadmill.
And I was wondering about
put
that.
His laptop on it and like writes while he walks. I would die. I am not that coordinated. I don't know if he maybe goes at a lower speed than I've been doing.
What if you wore one of those boxer mouth guards?
I think I would need to be wrapped in bubble wrap because I would get wrapped up and then just go sliding off the back of it.
Can we talk?
I'm sure you would be fine as long as you didn't try to chew bubble gum at the same time.
Tony, you do how many pages a week for Delilah Dirk?
you had emailed and you asked how I keep up this schedule with Delilah Dirk. And the secret is that it's already done. The whole story that composes The Turkish Lieutenant is finished. And I put up 4 pages a week.
Oh.
That's clever.
Yeah, okay. Because I was going to say, man, because these pages are – I encourage people while you're listening, whether you are watching the stream live or listening to this after the fact, go to DelilahDirk.com and look at these pages. There's no way anybody could be doing 4 to 5 pages a week and writing it as they go along and achieving this quality.
Especially not beside a day job.
Okay.
And I've done that. I've done that a couple times with my flight stories, which were done sort of in the evening, you know, after getting home from work. And that is a suboptimal, to say the least.
It's a polite way of saying it. Yeah, it's pretty tough.
It's a word associated with Jersey a lot.
What's that? Suboptimal. So one of the things I wanted to get at real quick was just to spend a few minutes talking about building premises, because one of the things I think is really, really awesome about Delilah Dirk and The Turkish Lieutenant, and I'm sure you could speak to this too, Paul, I mean, as a writer who has to come up with new stories, new situations, new premises, is you set up in the first couple pages of the story, the character's trapped, right? The Turkish Lieutenant, Mr. How do you pronounce his name? Selim?
Salim.
Salim.
I believe. I've never had to actually pronounce it. I think it's pronounced Salim.
But it's
it is now.
Yes. He's the author. You know, yeah. We got to go along with it.
Authorial intent? That's just silliness.
Yes, the internet has removed authorial intent. Just do what you want with it now, yeah, man.
Now the entire internet are English literature professors.
Yeah, you read Wikipedia lately?
Yeah. It's like, oh, don't worry about what the author meant. Let me tell you what the author meant.
Isn't that what every English 12 class is for?
Yeah, that's exactly.
Actually, yeah.
Trying to figure out what the author meant?
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes me back to reading Virginia Woolf and having somebody explain what that impenetrable text was all about. But premises. Like, you know, you got this great situation where, you know, Delilah Dirk shows up, she wrecks this guy's life, and then he's now indebted to her. He's driven by a sense of honor or some kind of, you know,
obligation.
And she's even telling him, she's like, you don't have to come with me. Go home anytime you want. He's like, I can't, you know.
They'll kill me.
They'll kill me, but also because, yeah, he can't go back home because they're going to kill me. But so you've trapped this guy into following along in this adventure. And now we get to watch whether or not he's going to cope and learn to like it, or whether he's going to crack up and, you know, try to kill her. You know, setting up a premise, that's pretty tricky stuff, right? And I think trapping mm-hmm. your characters is one great way to do it. I'm just wondering if you guys could share a few words on, like, how you think about setting up premises for your stories to, like, drive the characters into the plot, right?
I will happily defer to Paul on this. He's probably got much more experience than I do.
Dang, nabbit, I was all excited when you started talking. I was like, yeah, Tony's going to go first.
It's a really intangible thing, right? I mean, I can talk to you about, you know, drawing and drawing techniques, because that's all something, you know, that's, you know, pencil to paper. It's much more tangible. But like coming up with ideas and story things, at least not yet. I haven't figured out any sort of methodology or
I want to make sure that you guys understand I'm not asking for like, oh, let's do a writer's 101 class.
Where do you get our ideas from?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey,
or
just crap, you guys.
that was last week. No, but like, not asking for a bullet pointed list of if you do this and this, then boom, you got a story every time. But I mean, I'm just wondering if you could express how you, like, any kind of like random observations you make in like what you think about when you're setting up a premise for your story. Because like the hard thing is, like, you start out with these characters and then you say, okay, well, how am I going to get them to do anything in this story? How am I going to push them into going into some place?
Well, doesn't it come from sort of maybe you have a character, you start off with a character you like, perhaps they have qualities that you like and maybe some other qualities that you don't like as much, but you just think, you know, how can I put this character in as much trouble or challenge this character as much as possible?
And that is kind of that we were joking about the writing 101, but like the idea is like, what do they want and what's stopping them from getting it? But I think, yeah, you run into the idea where you do a lot of times start out with the character. You just envision some cool, you know, character, and you go, all right, well, you know, what's their world? It ends up being sort of organic because, you know, you've got the kind of character they are, and then this is the world they live in, and, you know, sometimes you're sitting at a diner and as you're leaving, there's a big car wreck on the major road, and you run out and make sure that the people are okay, and then like you
we lost Tony. Finish your thought though.
And you check on everybody, make sure everybody's okay, and then you know, well, actually, or you stop on your way out of the diner and tell them to call 911, and then you go and check on everybody and make sure everybody's okay, and then you go, hey, this would be a really good start to a story,
I love how it has to be a calamity. Somebody gets into a car wreck. Okay, so go out and watch for some car wrecks.
They say, write what you know, right?
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is sometimes it's like you go, oh, there's this character, and it's, you know, oh, this character is the you know, the son of these mythological characters, and I'll do, you know, something. And sometimes you have some catastrophe happen right in front of you, and you go, and sickly, you go, ooh, I could make a story out of that.
Let me ask you this. Okay, this is I want to close on this thought. I want with this question.
We're done already. Okay.
No, because we had another thing that I want to spend some time on. Yeah, the show goes fast.
Yeah, I know. It's because you talk a lot.
I wonder. You got the guys in the production area laughing now. Now I lost my train of thought. Oh, so you said okay.
We're wrapping it up.
No. Yeah. You're coldly looking at this wreck, this car accident, and there's a part of you that's like sort of separated from the moment that says, "Hey, I should grab this and use it for." Do you guys find that you're doing that a lot when in daily life and also in like the entertainment you consume? Do you constantly have like this camera on in your head that's like collecting this stuff for potential story ideas, or is it something that is a little bit more of like it's happening under the radar for you?
It's probably, I don't know, Paul, I was going to ask you, lost my train of thought too.
Well, in that case, I'll answer yes.
No, Paul, I was going to ask if my experience seems to be in putting a story together is like a little bit like combining a puzzle or solving a puzzle. You know, sometimes you get elements you observe, sometimes you get elements you imagine, sometimes you get elements that come from, you know, historical research. I find it's sort of a process of putting it all together so that, you know, it. Is this why the show's going to be so long? Use the rules you've learned and your inspiration, and it all comes from all sorts of different spots together to hopefully form a cohesive whole.
Absolutely. I think that is, I mean, the Jersey, going back to kind of combining your sort of taking like those two pieces of the puzzle that I got from Tony and from you is that you're on almost all the time. You don't necessarily notice it. I mean, sometimes you're hit with the bolt of lightning and you go, hey, something dramatic actually happened in the life of a sedentary writer. Perhaps I shall use this someday, you know.
You pull from everything, right?
Yeah, like, you can't
not. I don't know if I'd say always, my personal experience is not having to feel like always on, but there are certainly those things that stick out in your mind, like maybe it's a small thing, maybe it's a large thing, but... Yeah. Maybe it gets transformed into something else. Maybe you know, like just a word you pick up walking around or whatever.
A name you hear. Mm-hmm.
Like the grain of sand
in the oyster.
An oyster.
Yeah, hopefully it was the oyster. I'm not positive where you were going with that, but I was hoping it was the oyster.
Wow.
I think that when I say always on, I don't mean like actively searching.
That's what I was trying to drive at.
But it's like. You know, we're geared towards building stories.
Is it like a muscle memory kind of thing, like a reflex that kicks in when it's
you
needed?
Know what we are? We're lint brushes.
Oh.
We roll over life and we can't help but pick things up.
Oh, man, that's good. That's good. That's almost T-shirt worthy.
Right, who came up with that right here.
Oh, wow. You heard it here first, everybody at Comics of Great Land.
It's not a bronies versus honies, but honies. But, yeah.
Bronies versus honies, or bronies before honies was good.
Yeah.
Paul, are you all right if I put that on my business card?
Bronies before honies?
I was thinking lint brush.
Lint brush. Human, yes. Intellectual lint brush.
Now, okay, this is the segue into the next thing I want to talk about. Spend 15 minutes on this. Yeah. So you guys talked about you're picking up things all the time. You guys both create stories that take place in very specific places and times. And I'm betting, I mean, especially looking at, again, I'm going to tell people, go to DelilahDirk.com.
Go now.
Yeah.
Go now.
If you're not reading this, there's something wrong with you. Either it's you're wrong for not knowing about it, or you're wrong because you don't like it.
You could just say you're either wrong or unfortunate, and now is your good fortune to have been informed of it.
The show is getting longer and longer. So many minutes remaining.
But So okay, you look at these scenes. Look at this. Look at the settings in this thing. Well, I wonder if I can put this on. I know I should put, see if it, I can show it on the internet camera here.
Yeah, looks like I love the internet camera. Happens to be my camera, not your camera.
Yeah. So I mean, like, there's like this really specific aqueduct, and I'm in the middle of one of the more awesome action sequences here. But, you know, very specific architecture, also very specific things being referred to in the story, like different kinds of tea. I'm guessing you didn't make up what kinds of tea, what elements were going into the teas that Salim was making, right? So you got to do some research, I bet. I bet you both have done your share of research, and I'm wondering if you could share some thoughts on how you research for your stories, and then does this research inform anything about where you're going to go with your stories as you're doing it?
Well, the very first thing you have to do is go down to your local library.
Really?
Your local library is a repository for all that is good, and remember to support your local library in any way that you can.
If you're lucky, maybe you'll find a delightful librarian who will be more than happy to help you find what you're looking for.
And perhaps you might even marry a delightful librarian.
You keep wishing, Paul.
Well, no, I said you.
Are there any other type of librarian?
I don't know that there is any other type of librarian.
Oh, I love how we're turning this into a PSA for the Ann Arbor District Library. You guys just secured my position here. Thank you.
But no, I often do. I mean, I certainly do my share of internet research, but I almost invariably find myself heading down to the library to get something tangible and
definitive.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's Wikipedia can help point the way, but you don't want to rely on it. You know, there are other internet sources, but yeah, there's generally better, more solid, at least textual, information, at the library or the bookstore. Support your local bookstore too.
Local bookstore, right. You don't have to go to Barnes & Noble. Go to, you know, like a mom and pop shop. Go to, like, Aunt Agatha's here in Ann Arbor.
Yeah, there you go. Not very far from here.
Absolutely. And I know our local public library here in Vancouver, the main branch, has a special collections library, which, among other things, includes some 200-year-old books, some books from the early and mid-19th century. And you can hold them. You can flip through them.
You
can't take them home.
Yeah.
I hit up a couple of those in the process of doing some of my research, and it's just it's an amazing experience to, you know, something that old and something that historied, basically.
Yeah.
Well, and actually being able to read something that was written during the period you were writing, as opposed to, you know, third or fourth or fifth generation. Mm-hmm. You know, version of that. I have not been that fortunate with that because I cannot read Old English for my Robin Hood books, and I don't believe that most of the mythology was actually written down at the time.
When you were writing the Hercules graphic novel, you could go back to the actual. See, he changed mugs again. He's got like a whole bunch of earlier on.
Do they all have different kinds of tea? Is this how you came up with the character of the Turkish lieutenant? Is that you're a tea aficionado, and you're just like, you know, it's like ringing bells. You know, they've got different tones and everything, and he's just like, oh, my palate needs this.
Yeah,
guys, there is only one mug. I don't know what you guys keep talking about.
Oh man!
There are four mugs.
Meanwhile, I'm going directly to the Three Amigos. I like this guy. He's a funny guy.
Was that El Guapo?
Yes.
So meanwhile, there's another mug on the screen. So anyway, what were you saying, Paul? Reading Old English or going back to, like,
I generally can't get to original sources. It's beyond my capability at this time.
Do you guys ever go to, like, museums and stuff to look at, like, art made from that period or anything?
I have not, you know.
Curious. I'm not saying that you had to.
Yeah, I was just, like, visual elements. That's kind of like the artist problem, isn't
That's
it?
True. That's true.
No, I actually also try and research as much, you know, visual stuff as I can to send along, too. But, you know, sometimes it was funny because you in your pre-show notes, you mentioned that we might talk about this. And I remember in particular, I asked for an incorrect haircut for my book, You the Great, First Conquering the Floods. I asked for a what I thought of as a traditional Chinese haircut with the queue, the long braided queue. And they had experts, Graphic Universe, to talk to experts in the field, professors, university professors, and said, oh, that's not the Han Dynasty. You're writing about the Han Dynasty, and that is a later. And I was like, oh, man, yeah, I feel so – I felt so bad. But it's a run, risky run with anything. Have you –
Those details, though, like haircuts and day-to-day stuff are the most difficult things to find research on and to to learn about. sorry?
Oh, I was going to say, have you run into, you know, somebody finding, like, one, like, the one little detail that you missed by,
Cliff.
Like, a couple, you just missed by a couple of years or something. It's like,
listen, there are so many things. If you knew how many things I just completely made up and were like, there are so many things that are historically inaccurate. Their boat is
what? They didn't have flying boats.
besides the fact that it flies, its shape and styling is mid 20th century. But
she's very advanced.
Can I just say, while I'm on here, I think Delilah Dirk has the kindest and gentlest readers. The most generous readers ever, because even when I get an email, like I did get one email calling me out on the fact that the teacups are all wrong, and they are. and the gentleman who pointed it out was super nice in the way he said it.
Wow.
So,
was he from Vancouver?
He wasn't.
Oh.
He was not Canadian. I think he might have been Turkish.
You notice he wasn't American. He wasn't from the United States.
Yeah.
Might have been like all, what the heck's wrong with you?
Man, we are a rude bunch, man. We just had Black Friday, and there's every year there's all those stories about all the brutalization that
we
do.
Well, that's people running over the guy having a heart attack and the pepper spray lady.
It's humiliating. I just look at the rest of the world and go, I'm sorry. Every year we do that.
Doesn't it make you... Yeah, I look to the rest of the world and go, doesn't it make you feel better about yourself?
All right. Anyway, I don't want to stray too far off topic. So
you guys, I was just going to say how nice all of the Americans I've met have been.
Oh,
I don't know where this stereotype comes from. I spent a little time in L.A. and even in L.A. where everybody's supposed to be crazy and horrible.
You spent a lot of time around cartoonists, didn't you?
Just random people. Everybody was really nice.
Damn. I was hoping you'd say.
I was in L.A. myself for about a year, like. 10 years ago, or something like that.
Oh yeah, about 2003.
Okay, yeah, I was like 2001 ish, but yeah, people were okay. maybe it's that, you know, it's nice to be nice to the nice, you know, and you're a nice guy, whereas like Jersey and I are kind of jerks.
Yeah, so, abrasive, acerbic. Even.
You are,
how about that?
Both abrasive and acerbic.
Yeah. And cleansing. Astringent. So
cleansing? Yes. We make your bowels move.
Like Albrand. It's like
Colon Blow from Saturday Night Live.
Okay, so let's talk about the historical details and doing your research. Do you mention that you had an expert at the publisher when you were working on You the Great? Tony, do you defer to any you're a deferential guy, but do you defer to any experts on this stuff? Do you show it to anybody?
I haven't been. When I first started off, the historical research that I had was very limited, almost like just limited to a few visual bits and pieces. And I haven't had the fortune to encounter anybody I haven't been looking, but I haven't had the fortune to encounter anybody that I can sort of use, not use, but like you say, defer to.
Consult with
for historical matters, unfortunately. Since I've started putting the website online, though, like I said, I met some people have been emailing me from Turkey and abroad, and I met quite a few people who I hope to be able to consult in the future.
I believe they prefer to be called a woman these days, not abroad.
Wow!
I see what
What about
if it makes you feel any better though? If I didn't have an expert foisted on me by the uh, b- by the publisher, I probably would have gotten it wrong.
Yeah, you would have gotten some emails from abroad.
Yes.
Is that so bad for a detail to be wrong? In the end, it's your characters and your story that carry, 90% of the weight. So, something, Paul. Actually, I wanted to ask you about this. Is like you've worked on some franchises.
I have.
That stereotypically have a following that would be a lot less understanding than somebody, commenting on me getting some teacups wrong. Like, how do you...
I got nailed on... I did an issue of Justice League Unlimited, and I was on one of the web boards that's very much devoted to... And I love the guys there. They're good folks. But I got a lot of guff. Very polite guff, but a lot of guff that, the Huntress shouldn't even be on the team at this point. I'm like, so assume it was a point before the Huntress. Oh, but then she's wearing the wrong costume. Oh, well, then assume that, there was a special. I'm like, because I didn't, and she's like, "Well, Supergirl's wearing the wrong costume to be if it's this time period, the costume Supergirl's wearing is wrong." And I'm like,
"Wow,
cut us some slack, man. it's impossible to match. I think they assume that because the cartoon was done by Warner Brothers and the comics by DC, that there's like this incredible synergy there." And nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, you do have some people working on some of the cartoons who are also involved in comics, but it's you do your best to not contradict when you can.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm also fortunate though, because I was working a lot on like the animated series stuff as opposed to the real DC universe. Yeah, and so I didn't get as much guff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they will pounce. I had a good friend of mine who was recently told that he wrote a character incorrectly. A character he had created.
Oh, wow.
It was a character he had created over at Marvel, and somebody wrote him and said, "Oh, you're getting that character all wrong. You don't understand that character at all."
What? Well, okay, that's kind of an edge case of comics fans. Yeah. But what I think is interesting is what you guys are pointing at here is like maybe a sense of consistency kind of supersedes any kind like absolute technical accuracy.
In the internal consistency of your story matters. I mean, Three Musketeers is not entirely historically accurate,
mm-hmm.
but we don't care,
right?
Because it's got a certain verisimilitude. And
listen, all these $500 words. I love that word.
Because it's what I strive for. I want it to feel right, at the risk of all sounding all Stephen Colbert. I want it to feel right more than be right. Because sometimes if you are exactly correct, it still feels wrong.
Yeah.
And what you want is for the reader to get immersed in the world and get swept up. And it's unfortunate if some little detail bumps some of the readers out. So you try and be as accurate as you can. But ultimately, you have to make the internal consistency and you have to make it work for your story, not, because, there are people who can get every detail right and they aren't going to necessarily make a story anybody wants to read.
Second part of the question that I had for you guys was how has doing this research, can you think of any instances where when you were poring over this research, going to your local library, doing internet searches, where something went ding, that's a great idea, I should use that in the story someplace. Has that ever helped your
absolutely.
Work? How so?
The prologue, if you're looking at Delilah Dirk, there's a prologue, and that was written actually after I'd reached or completed most of the story. And I was looking for a way to make Salim's life much more miserable right at the start. And I happened to be reading at the time a book about the time and the place. And just one of those elements like dropped right into my lap, about the Sultan having, unfortunately, I can't remember the specifics right now, so I'm probably getting them all wrong. But the Sultan basically having, I think, soldiers fight amongst each other for food.
Right.
Not necessarily as it's portrayed in the comic as a sort of source of entertainment, but... That was one of those situations where, yeah, I was looking for something and I just happened to run across something in the history that, or in the research that would work perfectly.
And that was a great, that was a great setup for, when, you know, when he later just went, oh, you're going to, I'm going to have to kill you because this woman ticked me off. I mean, it just, because you had, it established the Sultan's character so well. That, you know, that kind of person that he was, that so, yeah.
Yeah, they established that, yeah, he was a brutal man.
Yeah.
And like, hey, I know it would be fun. Let's put a big pile of money in the middle of the room and watch it get all of our soldiers to beat the living heck out of each other.
And call it payday.
And so then, it makes it more credible when later on, after Delilah Dirk escapes, and he just turns to this poor hapless guard next to him, the Sultan does, and just... junk.
Yeah.
Knife through the torso, and then that's it. That's just how he exercises his demons, you know? It's like, I feel better.
Yeah.
That's what I mean when I say it's a violent comic. But it's a violent comic that I think is still accessible to young people. It's written in that kind of way that is – it's not glamorizing violence. I mean, it's making it a little slapsticky in places, but no more than, say, like Indiana Jones does or traditional old-timey comics, the old serials, like Crimson Ghost.
About it, I was going to say, if you think about it, Star Wars didn't have a G rating.
Yeah, and everybody's getting all sorts of body parts cut off.
Yeah, so, you know, it's the kind of thing that we didn't used to flinch about.
I was talking with, I teach a lot of comics classes, and I had a 14-year-old kid say, he just saw The Goonies for the first time. And he said, boy, you know, 80s movies sure are weird. And I'm like, why is that? He's like, there was so much swearing and so much violence. He's like, everybody's getting shot. And he's like, that movie was for kids? Everybody says terrible words in that. I was like, yeah, now that I think about it, that would not fly today. That would be a rated PG-13 or R movie nowadays.
Yeah. Is there a lot of swearing in The Goonies? I don't remember that.
I think wasn't it the stocky kid?
Chunk.
I thought it was Chunk.
He should get an Academy Award retrospectively for that performance.
But
in that
movie. Doesn't he occasionally like slip?
It's actually pretty constant.
Is it all of them though, or is it just him?
It's more concentrated around Chunk and then Corey Feldman's character Mouth. They both have the foulest mouths of all of them. But all of the characters, even Data, the kid who played Short Round in Temple of Doom, he drops a few bombs here and there. So.
And what kind of bombs are they, though?
S-bombs. I don't think there's any F-words.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think there's any F-words, but still.
Yeah.
Still, you know.
Jersey, can you be more specific? I don't understand.
There are a lot of words that begin with F.
I don't even use those words in real life, not much less on a podcast.
Not true. He doesn't use them for more.
What?
Another mug.
Okay. Well, we got Sharon Iverson showing up in a few minutes, so I'm going to have to eject Paul, pull the trapdoor lever.
And Sharon, I think, is going to rightly scold me when she gets a chance because I think I have not sent some information to her that I was supposed to for my visitation here in March.
I do want to give you guys a chance to share any final thoughts, anything else that you want to plug and you want to make a mention of. You get to be any place. You were just at a signing. You do any more of these signings?
I don't have any new signings lined up yet. I do want to remind folks that local artist Jake Miner and myself are working on Sheena, Queen of the Jungle for Moonstone.
Cool.
Jake's doing gorgeous work on that, and hopefully we'll be seeing that sometime early next year. Keep in mind that Muse is out in stores in December. It's a 4-issue miniseries, should be coming out monthly because it's all done. Again, that whole, like, if you have it done, then it can come out smoothly and flawlessly.
True. Hey, speaking also of done, Comixology, aren't they selling some of your books?
They
digitally?
Have
the Andorian Star Trek story you did
was that was on sale for 99 cents. crazy.
Is it still on sale?
I'm not sure. IDW.
It's a good book anyway, and it's about the best Star Trek aliens. So.
Exactly. Plus, Comixology also has Gotham Girls, which is the only place you can find Gotham Girls.
Do you get a royalty on that?
Probably eventually. more people that pick it up, the more people.
I've read it, people. There's some snappy dialogue in there. Whoa, look at that. I said something nice.
Oh, nice. And also my issue of Batman Beyond, issue 23, which was my first published DC work, but I thought was really good. I really enjoyed doing that one. Excellent art by Craig Russo on that. There are a couple other things up on Comixology by me. As well.
So just go to comixology.com. It's Eric typed it into the chat and do a search for Paul Story. Storrie.
You don't even need my first name.
No.
Trust me, I'm the only Story on Comixology.
And Storyville on Twitter.
Storyville.com. I don't even send people to my blog anymore. I'm thinking about deactivating it. The only comments I got on my blog anymore are like spam comments from post 3 months before.
Oh, really? Nobody goes and says, hey, I love seeing you on Comics Are Great?
Well, you know, I very seldom blog about that. I put that up on Twitter. Because I don't blog about anything anymore. Because I have Twitter and I have Facebook and I have Google+.
You're dead to me. You don't even blog about your appearances after the show. All right. Well, so Sharon's here. So Paul can go.
I'm going to go while Tony talks about the stuff that he has coming up.
And we'll bring you back to say goodbye to Tony when we're done recording.
Awesome. It's a pleasure meeting you, Tony.
And actually,
a pleasure to meet you too, Paul.
And also, I have to ask, that Transformers poster in the background where you're sitting, Tony, is that there all the time?
No, it's not.
Oh.
Now, hold on. That's giving you the false impression. I have had that poster for most of my life at this point. Wow. And it was going to be in here at some point. I just used the opportunity as an excuse to get it up.
Oh, well, that was very thoughtful of you. And it's thrilling for me to know that such a talented artist is also one of the gentle, beautiful people who like Transformers. So, anything that you wanted to throw out a shout out for, anything that you got coming up that's exciting?
Visit DelilahDirk.com, DELILAH, Dirk.com. The book, the first part of the first half of the story is out in French right now. So if you're in France and you'd like to read it in French, you can get that in paper form over there. Second half comes out in January. But for me, that's it right now.
So, wait a minute. Run that by me again. Did you say this is coming out in print soon?
It's coming out in French.
Why not in English?
Give me time.
All right.
I'll be happy to get back to you on that when that is a thing.
Let me know, because then I can talk to Sharon Iverson about getting it added to the library's collection.
Yeah.
Hey Sharon.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing good. Yeah. So we got a lot of things to talk about. We got some events coming up that we need to make some noise about, and then we got some. I see you brought some books.
A couple. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So. First of all, this coming Sunday, December 4th, we have from 1 to 3, you, along with Ryan Estrada. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you guys are going to present?
As I understand it.
We know that it goes a little bit spontaneously, but...
Yeah, Ryan and I are going to talk a little bit about the Google+ and Twitter and how Ryan managed to become one of the most influential people on Google+ over the course of the first couple months of it being... going, and how he has leveraged it in his own career to get lots and lots and lots of readers of his comic. Mm-hmm. So it'd be a lot of that. A lot of like use cases of these different social media outlets, which ones work for which audiences, which ones work which way, like also Tumblr and things like that. So yes, that's 1 to 3 p.m. December 4th at the Downtown
Library multipurpose room. Yep.
So thank you for getting Ryan in on such short notice, because it was I blindsided you at the last Comics Artist Forum. You were like, oh, Jersey's going to be talking at our next forum, and I was like, hey, we should get Ryan. He's right here.
Yep. No.
You're like, okay, we'll make
no,
it happen.
That's fine. He's not in the country that often, so got to grab him.
Yeah.
Now I want to ask you, there's something special coming up at Mallet's Creek where I work most of the time, a special exhibit.
Yeah.
Starting December 17th and running through January 30th.
I don't know why you guys are so good to me, but yes, you graciously invited me and my wife Anne to have an exhibition of our work, our comics work, and I was crossing my fingers when I passed the title over the table to everybody, and I just decided to call it Comics with an exclamation point.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, okay, sure. And
yeah.
So, yeah, that's going to be on display. That's, the URL. It's at AADL.org on the
right.
events listing.
Right. So. And we're looking forward to it because we've been talking about doing some kind of comics exhibit for a long, long time. So I'm glad you guys are going to be at first.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Yeah.
Really excited about it. So thank you guys for that. But and then also one more event that I wanted to point people at, and you're invited, Sharon, Make the Comics December 8th at Ruse Roast Coffee Works on off of Industrial on Rosewood. There's a Facebook event listing that I will link to in the show notes. I'm sure Eric's already posting it in there. Eric's on top of all this stuff. Man, he's so awesome. Mm-hmm. So December 8th from 5 to 8 p.m., we're going to have a comics get-together, drink and draw with coffee.
Mm-hmm. Sounds cool.
Might not have as many mugs as Tony has, but Ruse Roast Coffee is some of the best coffee in town. I don't want to make it sound too much like a commercial, but there's a reason I went with them, because their coffee is excellent if you're a caffeine addict like me. But it'd be a chance for you, Sharon, mm-hmm. to gather up a few more cartoonists, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
yeah. Just want to put a word out there a little early, but on January 8th from 1 to 3, we'll have our first Skype guest artist at Comics Artists Forum.
Well, that's right.
And that's Rob Stenzinger out of Minnesota.
Stenzinger of ArtGeekZoo.com mm-hmm. will be our guest speaker. Tony, you wouldn't be interested in doing a guest speaking event for the Comics Artists Forum or teaching some of your coloring techniques?
I do not know anything about what you are talking about, but I will be happy to discuss that further. Yes.
Cool.
Because I don't know if you've seen his stuff, Sharon, but Tony's coloring is exquisite.
Wow.
It's he's painting with light, and he's doing an amazing job of it. But I think if you could do a demo over Skype for our kids on how you paint in Photoshop, that'd be super, super cool. We'll talk about it. So what else you got for us?
Oh, I just brought a couple books along. You know, the Muppet movie came out over the weekend. It's super popular.
It, yeah.
And so I have Muppet Sherlock Holmes, which
right there.
Came out this, I think it was in March. And it is a delightful read with Gonzo as Sherlock and Fozzie as his sidekick, Dr. Watson, and Kermit as Inspector Lestrade or whatever his name is. And the humor is there totally. It's delightful. There's four different mysteries that they're involved, and they all seem unrelated. But as you can imagine, certain other characters from the Muppets, Miss Piggy, et cetera, keep making little appearances. And so you begin to pull strings together.
This wouldn't happen to be by Roger Langridge, would it? I'm sorry to pull it off the camera.
I wrote it down. It is
Patrick
by
Stork.
Yeah.
Amy Meberson did the art.
Yeah. And David Peterson did the cover. So.
Ah,
and we know David.
There's our Michigan connection.
I also brought one that is from a series of books, and this one came out this year as a second book. These are both kid books. Super Diaper Baby 2, The Invasion of the Potty Snatchers. And Dave Pilkey is a guy I've heard about since way back. He won a written and illustrated contest back in Kansas City, where I used to live decades ago. And so I've kind of followed him, and he's done the famous Captain Underpants, but his stuff is just kind of natural for graphic novels. And so he did his first Diaper Baby in 2002. This one is his second, and it is a shift for the two authors, George Beard and Harold Hutchins, who have been told by their evil principal that they've got to get off the poop kick. And so they decide, and they think and think and think, and their new theme is pee. And, slight change there, but there's an evil guy who turns into this puddle of pee and wreaks havoc all over the city.
So, that was worth it just so I could hear you talk about this.
Yeah. It's fun. So a couple books there that are fun.
In the library's collection.
Yep.
We'll link to them in the show notes. Awesome. Well, thanks for those, Sharon.
Yep, you're welcome.
Any last things that you wanted to make some noise about that's been going on at the library, besides all the awesome events that we got going on?
All the awesome events?
You're going to be on in 2 weeks, right? When we got Dave Roman and Raina Telgemeier on.
Really?
Yeah. We're going to get them to talk about their trip to France.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'll have to brush up on my French. Ha ha ha.
Ooh la la.
Ooh la la. Yeah.
And, oh, that thing too,
yeah.
So yes, okay. Well,
that'll be cool.
We're at the bottom of the hour, so I'll wrap up. And so Sharon, you're at AADL.org. Still haven't convinced you to get on the Google Pluses yet.
I got to get there.
Ryan,
yes.
Ryan and I are going to do that at the forum on December 4th. So we're going to set up your account live.
Thank you.
What we'll do. Yeah, you just sound thrilled.
Yeah.
But you can find Sharon at AADL.org. She's often working at Mallet's Creek if you want to get some great graphic novel advice if you're in the area. So, and then, you know, I want to thank Paul Story again of Storyville.com for being on the show. Tony Cliff, gosh, this was so much fun. I would love to have you back sometime. I'm thinking getting you and Jake Parker and Dave Roman for a three-man roundtable on a subject I think would be super fun.
Oh, man, I will come back anytime. I feel like there's so many things we did not get to touch on.
I know. It went too fast. It went way too fast. So,
you know, some people have three-hour podcasts.
I you know, if it were up to me, I would happily go more than an hour. But since Ann Arbor District Library is pumping money and resources into this show, I do have a clock to watch. I have to defer to them. I have to be a little Canadian myself sometimes, and be deferential to my surroundings. But no, seriously, that was great, and I would love to have you on again to talk more about this because yeah, there's a lot of places we could go with this discussion. But in the meantime,
my pleasure.
In the meantime, everybody should be visiting DelilahDirk.com. It's an amazing, amazing comic, and thanks for stopping by to talk with us about it. So, oh, and you can follow you on Twitter at. Do you prefer that people follow Delilah Dirk or?
If you would like updates on Delilah Dirk, if you'd like to know when the latest update is up, that's at Delilah Dirk, and my personal account is at Tango Charlie.
TC. So, okay, well, thanks everybody for downloading and watching. This will be broadcast live again next week at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time out of comicsaregreat.tv. And this episode will be collected as a podcast, an audio and video show at comicsaregreat.com/CAG39. And until next time, I've been Jersey Droz, comicsaregreat.com, and Jersey on Twitter. Okay, bye.